making Jacksonville and North Florida a smart city. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a nice weekend out there. Just ahead, how did Jacksonville do in this year's Smart Cities Challenge? And what does it mean to be a smart city anyway? Well, we're going to find out, and you can join us. Give us a call right now at 549-2937. Then later, a preview of WJCT's new afternoon news magazine, Here and Now. It will debut right here on 89.9 later today. We'll speak with the hosts, Robin Young and Jeremy Hobson. Plus, Culpepper, he'll stop by later in the hour and tell us about the raves the Jaguars are getting for their draft picks. Yeah, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first, this Monday, it is a vision and a path forward for what's now being called the North Florida Smart Region. The First Coast recently took part in a prestigious international challenge to become what's known as a smart city. Everything from digital innovation to big advances in transportation and transit and much more are part of what's making this area a smarter region. What's this all about? Well, we're starting off this Monday with a closer look as we welcome Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of the North Florida TPO, that's Transportation Planning Organization. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you. And John Schultz, he's Chief Innovation Officer for Allied Reliability, Inc. Good morning, John. And here's our question to callers. How do you define a smart city? What are your questions about the First Coast participating in the International Smart Cities Challenge? We're talking technology, innovation, transit, and more this morning. And you won't believe what's being planned for this region. It's some eye-popping stuff. So give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And Facebook comments always welcome as well. And we need to begin by disclosing, of course, Jeff, that North Florida TPO is an underwriter of this program. You just participated in the International Smart City Readiness Challenge. Sounds really interesting. What does that mean? What all took place?
What that meant for us was sort of an attempt to really validate what's been happening really over the last 24 months or so on the backdrop of developing a smart regions initiative, predominantly in the transportation space, looking at automated vehicles and other technologies, innovations that we can use on the transportation system, has really evolved into an initiative now that's finding us in health and human services and energy and elevating our younger generation and looking at new opportunities. So The Readiness Challenge was really an opportunity on a global scale to hopefully secure resources from around the world, frankly, workshops and opportunities to really vet with some expertise around the world. We were able to land as one of the 10 finalists, which was very rewarding for us. I think the
out of dozens and dozens of entrants,
30 countries attended the event. And it gave us some real exposure. I think that we came with a unique approach, given that our context was regional versus in most of the cases they were city oriented. So it was a little different approach.
It's 549-2937 on this Monday morning as we talk about this area becoming a smart city. It's a lot more than you might think about. Okay, John Schultz, you are Chief Innovation Officer for Allied Reliability, Inc. Tell me a little bit about your involvement in this. And it's called the North Florida Smart Region Coalition. This is a really ambitious master plan for the whole region. Everything from new energy, telecommunications, and even health and human services initiatives, all kind of working together.
Yeah, so the backdrop of Allied Reliability is the fact that I've spent the last 20 years in the maintenance and reliability space across a lot of municipalities as well as predominantly manufacturing. And we apply a whole host of technologies to industrial equipment. And as such, I've spent the last 5 years engineering my own company's digital transformation. And so when I looked at my LinkedIn following with over 18,000 followers, 2/3 of them are actually digital guys, not maintenance and reliability guys, which is kind of weird. Just moved to Jacksonville 3 years ago.
Where'd you move from?
Charleston, South Carolina.
And why'd you choose Jacksonville?
My wife had been a longtime Florida resident, and we wanted an opportunity to get back to Florida. And for me, she had lived more in Southern Florida, and Northern Florida was more in line with what I wanted from a community.
Which is what?
You know, for me, it was about, I spent the last 18 months engaging with over 70 different tech companies that I've had meetings with their CEOs and founders. And I'm amazed with the amount of tech that's in this town. Everything from companies that are doing very unique things with drone inspections to people that are building integrated data exchanges to companies that are doing some of the best work I've ever seen with AI and machine learning.
So a lot of technical innovation is happening here, more so than people realize. It's sort of an under-the-radar phenomenon, isn't it?
That's exactly what's happened, Melissa. I think with the initiative, which we will be rolling out publicly a new brand from what we're talking about today. We will be rolling out Smart North Florida as the brand for the region. But what it's done is, this has been what's so fascinating for me. I'm a 27-year transportation guy in public sector, and this is an initiative that has just resonated across the community, has discovered this tech community that John's referencing that we did not know exists. And these are that millennial and entrepreneurial sector that's really trying to change and elevate the community that they're living in, as well as obviously create business opportunity for them. And we've discovered them. And I think that that's what this initiative does, is it allows both public sector and this new private tech environment to work together to try to solve some of our challenges.
What is Smart North Florida? How does the First Coast become a hub for technological innovation? Yes, we want your calls and questions about that at 549-2937. So can you both give me an example of the kinds of things the average person will notice or interact with as this area unveils its master plan to become a what's called internationally a smart city? What are some examples of that?
I think in the transportation space, what they're going to see is a further evolution of some of the things they've already experienced, as if when they're on the interstates and seeing cameras and sensor controllers and dynamic message signs, many of those same infrastructures. We've spoken on other shows about the JTA and their automated vehicle system. Those are some of the things that they're going to see visually. But I think what we've really realized at the depth of this is not really the projects that we're putting out. What a smart city is the ability to capture the data behind those systems so that we combine them with other data sources and really do the proper analytics to look at how we move forward in the future or how we can better address concerns. And I think that's really been the exciting part, was that transportation serves sort of as the conduit. And now the funnel has just opened to all sectors in this space.
One new technology that people have heard a lot about, but that they still have a lot of trepidation about, that's going to be part of this is autonomous vehicles, John. You know, driverless cars. That's, I think, a concrete example that we can talk about that we'll be seeing in terms of downtown public transit. But there are others. That's just one. Right.
Absolutely. I mean, and the amazing thing is the amount of work that's already going on in Jacksonville that's under the radar that people don't even know about. Like some of the work that Ted Willich and NLP Logix has been doing with the Kids Hope Alliance, the Children's Hope Alliance, that they don't even know that work is actually going on.
What are some examples there?
They've actually got using Tableau and big data from six different data sources to identify where all of our food deserts are, to identify where we have the best household stability. And they're actually starting to use that to make sure that the grant money that is and the city's money that is actually going into those neighborhoods is aligned with the opportunity in the neighborhoods. There's just some amazing stuff going on. Jeff and I have actually committed to one another that we're going to visit a minimum of two non-for-profits per month and immerse ourselves in those non-for-profits, because we think that this is an amazing opportunity to lift up the entire community. Mm-hmm. Jeff always says all ships must rise. If at the end of the day, Jacksonville thinks that just having 15 autonomous vehicles running up and down Bay Street means that we've arrived at a smart city. While that will be the most visible element of a smart city, that is not what the smart city initiative is about.
So that's the tip of the proverbial iceberg then.
Absolutely. I think that when you look at the AV system and you look at some of the more visible transportation pieces, that was just to put the area on the map. And then we have really almost grassroots discovered what this really means to the community. When you start looking at the opportunities to address our issues of pedestrian fatalities or the challenges of our homeless or drug addiction or elevating our youth or being more efficient in the energy space with utility partners in JEA or the prospects of how the shipyard development evolves to better address this evolution of tech, I think what we've seen here is a combination of infrastructure. When we talk about the projects, we've seen this culture now where we've been able to discover that tech environment. We've been able to discover the demographic that most every city in America are trying to get to move to their downtowns and really be part of the community solution. And so it's just been fascinating for me to watch already how things have evolved. And when you look at someone like John, he's representative of a number of folks, frankly, in our community that we didn't know were here that are working in this space, but they're working in this space outside of Jacksonville in North Florida. Now we've created a culture and environment for them through their business practices to now bring those expertise into our community and help us address what are happening, frankly, outside the U.S. far more aggressive than here. Mm. So we're just giving the opportunity now through this initiative to really, again, all ships rise, private sector creating new opportunities and business out of this through creating solutions, and the public sector and community benefiting from the solution.
Let's go to your calls now, as the First Coast became a finalist recently in the International Smart City Readiness Challenge. What does that mean for this area? What are your questions about this region becoming an innovation hub for technology, infrastructure, and more? It may sound counterintuitive to a lot of you out there, but there's more happening than we realize, and we're trying to educate everyone about it this morning on the show. 549-2937. Doran is on the west side right now. Doran, good morning.
Good morning. This is a really exciting topic, and it's thrilling to me because I often refer to Jacksonville as a giant Mayberry. So it looks like we may take a big leap forward with this. So I've got a couple of quick questions. One, I wondered in the process if this initiative might jumpstart a digital grid for our electrical system. Two, I'm wondering if the freeways use of cameras might spark more CCTV across the actual city for safety reasons. And finally, I'm wondering if there will be 5G technology involved, because I know AT&T is rolling out 5G, I think, by next year here in Jacksonville.
Okay.
So I'd love to hear those answers.
Three excellent questions. Thank you for all three of those.
The quick answer is yes, yes, and yes.
How
to all three
that?
Of them. But on the first, to smart grid, that is something that JEA has aggressively been pursuing. They were actually one of the three sort of partnering projects within the Readiness Challenge, an innovation lab that would continue to allow them to advance their smart metering and water usage analytics and deployment. So that is where JEA is aggressively moving to. On the camera issue, more specific to that is, we are seeing now the idea of beginning to joint use the types of cameras that are out there, so that we're not, from an aesthetic standpoint, looking at 7 cameras mounted to 1 pole. So you're starting to see the partnerships exist now, whether it's transportation, law enforcement, and others. So that is happening as well. I frankly forgot.
5G.
5G. Yeah, you've heard that conversation, and that is something that's coming to the community as well, and that is a critical piece when you look to the backbone of the infrastructure. Don't you agree, John?
Oh, absolutely. And the other interesting thing that we've got going on in Jacksonville is that, as we've talked about, this is literally just the beginning. Jeff and I have been having conversations with several different community leaders as well as investors in the community about creating a hub and spokes. One of the biggest challenges that Jacksonville has had is the fact that in order to visit those 70 CEOs and founders of tech companies, I literally had to drive all 849 square miles of Jacksonville. There is no current really sync as to where that tech hub is. And so being able to create an innovation hub in and around the downtown, but then also having those spokes so that all the other tech communities around the North Florida region can engage, I think is going to be tremendous. And things like 5G infrastructure are going to be enablers for that vision.
Jim is in Avondale. Hey, Jim, happy Monday to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. This is Jim Love, and I would just like
Councilman
to say
Love, how are you?
How are you doing, Councilman?
I'm great. I think Jacksonville's so lucky to have Jeff Sheffield as part of our transportation intelligence. He's just such a great guy. He's moving Jacksonville forward in a wonderful direction. I was going to ask the same question as the previous caller about 5G, but we're going to be one of the first of the 12 cities that AT&T puts in 5G, and I think it'll make a big difference for our automated travel and many other things, like Jeff has already stated. But appreciate you talking about this on the show today.
Sure.
And again,
Councilman Love, how was Jacksonville chosen as just one of 12 cities to get that rollout? Do you know?
Yeah, I think because we finally got the design down and sort of cleared the way of what it's going to look like and what size of boxes we're going to be. And all that was cleared out. So once it was done, then they could go forward and build their boxes without any problems because the design was already decided.
Excellent. That's Councilman Jim Love calling in.
Heard his reference to boxes, and I think that's one of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk a lot about the data and that component to it, but on the physical infrastructure side, we're just seeing constantly redundant pieces of equipment putting out because of silos, departments, and others working in their own space. And even that box conversation, it was the physical look of what was going to be mounted to the poles. And I think what we're looking at in some of this, like in downtown with the Bay Jacks Innovation Corridor, is could we really challenge the aesthetic design of some of this infrastructure and really create something that works and looks better.
And 5G or fifth generation wireless networks are going not only to Jacksonville, but other cities around the region, Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, Raleigh, San Antonio. This is going to really be a big leap forward in speed more than anything, John, for people that aren't familiar with what 5G means.
Yeah, the promises of 5G are 100 to 1,000x what you're currently getting with 4G. And so what that starts to enable is that the bandwidth requirements of some of the video analytics that you're wanting to do that Jeff's been talking about is it really enables those types of interesting use cases, which is a new term that we've started getting more and more comfortable with in the smart city space. We've always used it in the manufacturing space. And Jeff and I have been talking a lot about how once we have this integrated data exchange and we have all of these data sources flowing into the data exchange, what unique community problems are we trying to solve? And how do we go about solving those? Those end up being individual use cases, which is a way that I think Jacksonville can accelerate beyond what everyone else is actually currently doing in the smart city space.
And I'm quoting here from the kind of boilerplate about the 5G coming to Jacksonville. They're promising also lower latency, which combined with the bandwidth boost will provide a firmer foundation for emerging technologies, including autonomous vehicles, advanced traffic control, and streaming virtual reality experiences. Mm-hmm. That's not part of what you guys are working on, but it's still interesting.
Actually, we will be eventually.
Oh, you will be? Okay.
That's the point, Melissa. I think one of the things I've even challenged our board at the TPO, given that we're in a transportation space, is really kind of as we've evolved into this Smart North Florida initiative and discovered all these sectors, we too sort of have to break down then that silo that we are only in transportation. While we may have to use our funds for that, we can remain the platform now for all of these different conversations to happen and continue to advance.
549-2937, Jacksonville and North Florida, a finalist in the International Smart Cities Challenge. What are your questions about 5G and other technologies and innovations coming to this corner of Florida? Les is on the west side. Hey, Les, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to ask if what you were talking about, traffic control, would that include the coordinating and syncing of traffic lights?
That's something I think a lot of people want to know the answer to, Les. Thank you for that.
Yes. And in fact, that's something actually that we have been evolving to for a number of years as the TPOs continue to fund new controllers in all of those intersection controller boxes that that are right now requiring a bucket truck to go out there and kind of set the timing. We have been slowly investing road by road by road. So the answer is much of our infrastructure now has the ability to run from a command center, which is happening every minute of every day. We'll continue to invest to get the rest of the corridors.
It's such a huge area that it takes time.
Our region is 2,600 square miles that we cover. So there's a lot of miles there.
And Jeff, do you want to talk a little bit about the future of things like the GreenWave app?
Yeah, I think one of the things that this platform has really given us, and I think this is what we need to understand, by virtue of us creating this brand and this presence in the space, and why that readiness challenge was so important to us, was that we are getting now interest levels from tech companies all over the world to want to come into our community and deploy their systems. And an example would be the one John just referenced, a company that wants to come in and deploy a system called GreenWave, test it on a road, not deploy throughout the entire region. This is a scenario that would do two things for you. It would basically tell you the speed to drive to reach every intersection at the right time, so that you don't speed up and stop, speed and stop, like many of us do.
Which is so annoying.
Yes.
Yes.
And then the second one, frankly, I'm probably going to call out most people in our community with this one. The second thing it will do is a countdown to green when you're sitting at the intersection, so that you'll put your phone down, even though you're not supposed to be using your phone.
Right.
That you will put your phone down and you're ready to move through the intersection so that the system stays efficient.
Huh. Wow.
I'm not saying anybody uses their phone at the intersection. However, you know who you are.
Yeah. All of you out there know who you are, especially the ones calling in right now, which we always encourage people to do after they pull over, not while they're driving. Dave is on the south side. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Brutally here. This is a very critical piece of something I've been advocating for a long time, is that we start using carbon metrics, carbon data, to help our planning process. And I've encouraged Jacksonville Electric Authority and their new leadership team to work this into their smart grid planning and their distributed generation planning. And I'm extremely happy to hear that Jeff and has picked up Mr. Schultz here, and they're moving ahead on this whole data-driven concept. And, you know, if you wanted to shift a little bit into a policy discussion, I hear elements of what some folks call the Green New Deal in what you're doing. And I just encourage you to not just look at the technology, but also think about how do you integrate this into the policy framework that we have to live in.
Okay, thanks for that question. What about that question?
One interesting comment around that question is North Florida does now have a green chamber, which I think is really important. Christina Kelkhorst has launched the Green Chamber, which is really starting to acknowledge a lot of the green initiatives that our local businesses are already doing, and just doing a better job of marketing it. And the other thing that we talk about is from all the studies that have been done for every smart city in the world, smart is sustainable and sustainable is smart.
Sure. And as the city moves more towards sustainability, both on the business side, but also as the caller asked, on the policy side, that's where real change happens. And how do you see this initiative nudging policy in that direction?
I think there are two parts to this from the sustainability, to be honest. There is a financial sustainability in this particular model, because when we are trending now to big data and that sort of environment, there is a value proposition to the private sector in that space. So we are seeing this shift to where there's a better balance between the necessary public funds and private investment to sustain this model. On the policy side, it is now the ability, because we are doing historical and the ability to do predictive analytics, it's going to allow policy change and policy test in a more real-time environment to understand the types of things that happen from our decisions, and that's kind of what we're seeing.
The other thing is I don't think a lot of people in the community understand a lot of the green transportation initiatives that you've already embarked in over the last several years. Jeff, do you want to highlight a couple of those?
Yeah, sure. I think some of the things that we're doing, particularly in the clean fuel space, a lot of federal funds being used to convert public fleets and continue to create more efficiency in that. Partnering with the regional council in sea level rise, making sure that those are factors now in our decision making for our road projects to make sure we are contemplating the impact of that. As we are making decisions, a lot of those types of things that are happening in the transportation space already.
Yeah, let's take one more call. It's Jimmy on the west side. Jimmy, good morning. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Thank you. Good morning. I have a question about the implementation of some of these technologies. I know that a lot of the time we look at a hub and spoke approach, but one of the speakers originally said that, or earlier said that Jacksonville is 849 square miles, which is huge. So I'm curious if these technologies are going to make their way out to the underserved areas on the north side, northwest side, west side, or if they're going to be concentrated downtown and through the urban core.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's a great question as well.
No, they're not going to be concentrated all downtown. In fact, one of the things very specific under the regional initiative is John referenced use cases. And what we're doing is trying to develop signature projects very specific to areas throughout our region. And then based on the evaluation of those, the success will allow them to scale outward. But what we are saying is we are doing things uniquely North Florida. And so we don't have to develop a one size fits all. So the underserved communities are one of the areas that, as John mentioned, twice a month to go visit some nonprofits. We're really, this term ladders of opportunity is a massive focus in the Smart City Initiative. How do you elevate local communities that are underserved or challenged obstacles, whether it's transportation or other conditions that are not giving them the opportunity to elevate in our community? So we are looking at very specific situations throughout the region. Just right now, obviously, the Bay Jacks Innovation Corridor is focused downtown. We're doing a very specific parking management system in St. Augustine. We're doing a pavement analytics project in Clay. We're visiting Green Cove and other cities. We're visiting the homeless shelters and trying to define very specific stuff. What we envision are developing signature projects throughout, not specific to downtown all the time.
There's a lot more to discuss, and we'll continue to bring this up on the show. But for now, we're so pleased to get the latest on smart city technology coming to this region. So guys, thank you so much for being on the show today. We look forward to continuing the conversation another day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jeff Sheffield is Executive Director of North Florida TPO. John Schultz is Chief Innovation Officer for Allied Reliability, Inc. And later, why Jaguars fans are raving over the team's draft picks. Culpepper with a look at that. But up next, a conversation with the hosts of WJCT's new show, Here and Now. That's after this. Keep listening. Welcome back. Well, WJCT is adding a new show, Here and Now, to our afternoon schedule starting today. I recently spoke with Robin Young and Jeremy Hobson, the co-hosts of this popular NPR news magazine. Let's listen. Robin Young and Jeremy Hobson, a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah.
We are thrilled to have Here and Now airing here in Northeast Florida and South Georgia on 89.9. For people that haven't listened to the show, tell us a little bit about the show.
So we are covering the news as it's happening in the middle of the day. I think, you know, Robin's been saying for a long time that the morning you're kind of getting ready for the news, in the afternoon you're looking back at what happened. But when we're on the air, it's all happening. Right. And I think if you look back over the last many years, a lot of the big stories as they're breaking are happening on our watch, right in the middle of the day between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, especially, by the way, during the Trump administration.
Right. We just had the Mueller report came out on our watch. We went all Mueller report all the time. Michael Cohen's testimony was on our watch. So, Melissa, what we'll do is we'll sometimes break format. Sometimes we become the NPR coverage in the middle of the day. And so we have breaking news for you. And by the way, the analogy I use that people are sick of, but in your area, they may not be. It's as if, Morning Edition puts the boat in, puts the boat in the water. And All Things Considered, you're kind of pulling the boat out of the water. We are paddling like crazy in the middle of the day. I mean, that's kind of, we really have a lot of breaking news that happens.
Well, that makes both of you very busy along with your producers and staff because you can have a set schedule for the show, a set format, and have to throw it all out on the fly.
Oh, yeah, all the time, all the time. A tweet happens and we throw it out. But we also do, both of us love doing features, storytelling. We were in your area a little while ago, across the state in Tallahassee, and visited after the terrible storms there, but also, did a story about the construction shortage, construction workers shortage in your area. Did the 13 Mile Seafood Company, coming back from the storms in your area. So we love to do stories, conversations.
You'll also hear from a lot of newsmakers on our show. We like to go after the people who are actually making the news, whether that be a politician or a business leader or an ordinary person who's experiencing, a hurricane or some kind of severe weather. We've got a daily business segment on the show, so we'll be checking in on whatever's going on in the business world. And also, we're the only NPR show that has an association with the BBC World Service. So we have access to the BBC's reporters all over the world. We have one of our producers who works specifically with a producer at the BBC that's assigned to Here and Now. And just in the last week or so, we've been able to get people on the ground in Sri Lanka to cover the news there after the terrible bombings there. We had people in New Zealand after the shooting at the mosques there. So we're able to really try to cover the world and the news as it's happening. Yeah.
That's what makes Here and Now, I think, just a fabulous show that we're thrilled to add to our lineup because, yes, I mean, you cover America, but you really also bring the world to our listeners. And you both bring such a wealth of experience, very familiar voices and personalities for so many Americans. And you make a great team, I think, as well.
Thank you. We think so.
Yeah.
We think so. And, you have to because there's a very thin membrane, I say, between when you're on the air and when you're not. It's just sort of you're just doing it. You're like shoveling the coal in the furnace. And so, it becomes something that it better be kind of almost your life when you're doing it at this pace.
I know that Robin, for example, loves having Coca-Cola on the table.
Okay.
And I'm obsessed with spicy foods at all times.
That's true. That's true. Anytime someone comes by, I say, children, this is not a good habit. I'm holding my Coca-Cola right now. What else? What would you like to know about us and what we do in the middle of the day?
When I listen to the show, I co-host a show with my counterpart in Miami, Tom Hudson, that's heard across Florida. At the same time, different shows have different structures. When I've listened to Here and Now, it sounds as though a lot of the time you break up the segments so that Jeremy does a segment and then you, Robin, do a segment. Is that the general way you do things?
Well, you try doing 16 different interviews in a day. It's actually a factor, I think, in large part of just necessity is that, if we've got to get up on the situation in, you know, Washington, and, you know, a story about screen time for kids and a new study that's come out, and the NBA playoffs and the election in Spain.
When you have to do all this. Oh, and don't forget synchronized swimmers.
Synchronized swimmers.
Swimming in plastic.
Right. Which, robots for the elderly.
What?
I mean, so when we have to do all those things, it's easier to divvy it up. And that's kind of the way that we do it in a lot of our segments, but we do have built-in stuff that we do every week together.
Yeah. It makes for a great program, I think. Yeah.
Well, thank you. And we would love to hear, I mean, one of the things we love is hearing from listeners what they would like to hear from in their area. Of course, we will always be covering the latest Florida man story.
That, of course.
We will be all over that. And we'll usually call Carl Heisen to do that with us.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it that they would like to hear? We'd really love feedback. What do you think? What do you think should be covered?
Oh, I think everything you're doing, plus certainly education issues, environmental mm-hmm. issues, anything involving taxes and spending, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of the things I think our listeners are interested in, along with all of the cultural stuff that you cover regularly, I think is a great fit for our audience. So we thank you both so much for giving us a short preview. We're really excited to start Caring Here and Now with Jeremy Hobson and Robin Young. A pleasure to speak with you both and get to know
you
a little better.
Well, thank you.
And Melissa, we may just have to come visit you.
That sounds like fun.
In the winter.
Research. Yes. We need to do some
I hope
research.
You do. We will welcome you down here for sure. Thanks so much,
thank
you guys.
Thank you.
And make sure to catch Here and Now as it makes its debut here in North Florida and South Georgia today at 1 o'clock on 89.9. It will air every day, Monday through Thursday. It's going to be a great show. We'll be right back.
WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting WJCT.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
First Coast Success is brought to you by Iberia Bank.
Welcome back. Well, engineer Tina Meskel is the 2019 Jack's Chambers Small Business Leader of the Year. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Mathis, editor of the Jacksonville Daily Record, spoke with Meskel about women and engineering. Here's our First Coast Success.
Tina Meskel is the Jack's Chambers Small Business Leader of the Year. An engineer, she founded Meskel & Associates Engineering in 2008. It has grown to 25 employees and annual revenue of $2.9 million. Tina Meskel, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
How did you choose a career in engineering?
Well, I originally started in a two-year drafting program, and it included math and science, and I loved it and was good at it, as it turned out. And so from that, it developed into a four-year program.
What factors led you to starting your own company?
Well, I had been working for about 13 years in a business here in Jacksonville, doing what I'm doing now. and I had some wonderful mentoring. I advanced to management, and then I sort of hit a wall. And I knew that if I wanted to continue to advance, it would have to be outside that business. And so that's what got me thinking about it. And I was also in an MBA program at the time at UNF. And we had a professor who gave us an assignment, prepare a one-page document, a work plan. Everything had to fit on it, a business plan, actually. One page, 1 8.5 by 11. It was crazy. But we had to do it. We had to prepare it. And as it turned out, when we came to class with that paper, he never took it up. He said, I want you to frame it. Put it on the wall and look at it. This could be your future. And it really changed how I thought about my ability to do that.
What did it say?
Basically, it had the name of the company. It had, and this was part of the assignment. It needed to be, who are you? What do you do? How are you going to get financing? How are you going to find clients? And so all of that process really led me to believing that, you know, I could really do it. You know, there's been a lot of wonderful things that have happened over the years. Being awarded our $5 million Jacksonville District Corps of Engineers contract was huge for us. But it is, in the moment, it seems like complete success. But later, you have to say, well, yeah, but what's next? We have to continue to build. And so I don't know that I've gotten to a particular point that I would call, I'm done, I'm here. It's always moving forward.
Well, you operate in a field dominated by men still. Mm. How has that affected your strategy?
Well, yes, that is true. We have a niche in the market as a woman-owned business. And that is because there is a certain amount of representation that is not there by women in my field. So we focus on that as our strategy. We're always, our main strategy for client building is building relationships. That's what we do. But we also focus on those that need us in that arena of woman-owned business, checking that box. And then we do an outstanding job for them, and we move on to working with these clients in areas where they don't have that requirement. You know, I have a wonderful business partner. He is really the person that has that big, long-term strategic thinking, which is something I need. And then all of the people that are our employees, you know, they come to work every day. They do their jobs. They're honest. A lot of them work out there on their own. We don't get to see them all the time. They're in their trucks back and forth from home to their job sites. And, you know, they're just doing wonderful jobs out there, and we appreciate them every day.
Well, Tina Meskel, president and owner of Meskel & Associates Engineering and the 2019 Jack's Chamber Small Business Leader of the Year, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
And up next, Culpepper, with everything you need to know and more about the Jaguars draft picks. We'll be right back. This is First Coast Connect.
Oakley Yoder was 9 years old on a climbing trip last summer.
I felt something like grab onto my foot.
A snake. Waiting for help, camp counselors calmed her with Gushers and Taylor Swift.
We listened to it like at least 20 times.
She also got 4 vials of life-saving antivenom. Why it cost more than $60,000 this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
In the early 18th century, the Apalachee people and the Spanish had a mutually beneficial relationship. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit Mission San Luis in Tallahassee. We'll discuss the 75th anniversary of the St. Petersburg Times in 1959 and talk about the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Marco Werman. Each day, we give you the world.
They don't want people driving into the center of London.
The world is curious.
It's a total chaos in Venezuela right now.
The world is surprising.
The Australian government is completely clueless.
The world is unexpected.
The Japanese really have made history today.
The world is right here. Join us this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Forget about Brangelina or Benifer. In Washington, the real power couple is Jovanka. Critics have called Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump the prince and princess of America. How are the president's son-in-law and daughter using their influence? Author Vicki Ward on the Jovanka White House. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, the Jaguars are getting rave reviews for their draft. Will it translate into a winning season?
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper says the draft has the potential to be a major plus for the franchise. And he explains his thoughts right now. Good morning.
Good morning. And let me apologize in advance in case I wander or get emotional after watching both Endgame and Game of Thrones yesterday. I'm not sure about my mental state here on a Monday. However,
you won't choke. Not today.
Not today.
Not today.
Not today. The Jaguars draft had some big moments and some picks that left me scratching my head. Overall, the draft has the potential to be a major plus for the team, and here's why. In every draft, there are tiers that don't really match up to the rounds. In other words, there aren't 32 first-round picks who all are basically graded the same. Those tiers tend to be smaller earlier in the draft. And in this draft, there were 4 elite players, then maybe a dozen very, very good players in the next tier, then maybe 25 or 30 in the next tier. So if you do the math, the Jaguars would have been expected to get somebody from the second tier and somebody from the third tier with their first 2 picks in the draft. But instead, the Jaguars had the good fortune of having Josh Allen, one of those elite players, fall out of the top 4 to them because you had the Raiders making crazy picks and the Giants were bound and determined to take a quarterback, as were the Cardinals. So they get Josh Allen, one of the top 4 players in the draft at number 7. And then in the second round, a player from the second tier, Juwan Taylor, falls to them. Some teams had concerns because he didn't run the 40-yard dash at either the combine or the personal workouts. His doctor didn't want him to stress a hamstring that it wasn't completely 100%. Now, hamstrings will heal, so I'm not sure why teams were all that worried about that, but it certainly appears to be a benefit for the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. It's a rare feat, though, that you have 2 elite players like that wind up on your draft. It happened once before for the Jaguars, though, 2016, in a very similar situation when Jalen Ramsey was the 5th pick, then Miles Jack fell to the Jaguars in the 2nd round because of concerns about injuries. In both cases, the Jaguars traded up to get the player they wanted in the 2nd round. Ramsey has played like an elite player in his short career, and Jack has certainly been worthy of his selection spot. So if Allen winds up becoming as good a player at his position as Ramsey is at his, and Taylor winds up being as good at his position as Jack has been at his, this is going to be a home run of a draft for the Jaguars.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, we'll see how it all plays out.
Fans are really excited, though.
They should be.
Yeah.
There have been some, you know, you sign a big-time quarterback in the offseason, and then get these 2 guys in the draft. There is reason to be optimistic about the direction that the Jaguars are taking. Now, that being said, there are some draft picks I'm not as sold on. Using a 3rd-round pick on an undersized linebacker from Murray State has me wondering, especially considering nobody expected Quincy Williams to be drafted, including Quincy Williams. Williams didn't attend the combine and didn't have a pro day workout, but NFL.com didn't have a grade on him on their draft preview, only saying that Williams likely needs time in a developmental league. Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell thought otherwise. He thinks he'll contribute right away on special teams and called Williams a tremendous athlete with speed and explosion, the kind of player our defense is built on.
So he sees something no one else sees.
Yeah, then. Apparently. And some, listen, if you take a flyer, if this happens in the fifth or sixth round, no problem. Third round seems like a bit of a reach, but the Jaguars did not have a fourth round pick, so that was sort of the rationale given by the general manager. The other pick that attracted quite a bit of attention is one I like quite a bit. The sixth round, the Jaguars selected Washington State quarterback Gardner Minshew. Some wanted the Jaguars to use the pick on a wide receiver or a safety, but the selection of the mustachioed quarterback fits perfectly with my theory of drafting a quarterback every year until you have your guy. And yes, the Jaguars paid Nick Foles $88 million, but with backups like Cody Kessler, Tanner Lee, and Alex Magoo on the roster, the Jaguars can certainly use some competition behind Foles. And Minshew has a great reputation as a winner and a guy with a great mind for the game, and that's exactly what you want out of a rookie backup.
Plus, his name's Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, you got to check this guy out.
I mean, come on.
He's got the mustache. Some have made the Uncle Rico comparisons. He's got a great personality.
Just looking at his Twitter page, you can see it. This guy's got personality with a capital P.
Yeah, and he played in four different places in 4 years, so we had to learn new offenses, so he does that very well. He is going to be fun as a quote, if nothing else. Also was the most accurate passer in college football last year, so you like that again out of a rookie quarterback. I don't expect Josh Oliver, the tight end picked in the third round from San Jose State, or fifth-round pick Reichwell Armstead, the Temple running back, to be major contributors, but they should provide depth on the offense. And if Oliver winds up winning the starting tight end job, that would make a huge draft win for the Jaguars. Seventh round pick was Dontavius Russell, started all 4 years on the defensive line at Auburn. That's a good pedigree for a guy who went with the 235th pick of the draft. Mm. In team history, think about this. The Jaguars have only drafted 15 players who have wound up making at least one Pro Bowl. This weekend, they drafted at least two with a chance to increase that number. So the Jaguars draft gets an A from me.
Excellent. And let's hope for a great season. It'll be here before we know it.
And off-season practices will be coming up a week and a half now. It'll be rookie minicamp and then OTAs and then mandatory minicamp, and training camp is just around the corner.
And you can follow all the sports news and notes for all of our local and regional teams on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Catch Cole there. And also every night on Channel 4, our news partner. Thanks, my friend, as always, for coming by on Mondays.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that is our show today. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our show director. And 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8, just keep listening for the Electro Lounge. See you Tuesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.